We have a couple of things just to indicate from the ATC. And that is committee reports. And on page 9, I'm sure all of you are aware that there are changes in some of the deployments in the committee. And in terms of this committee, the Honourable Van Schalkwyk has been discharged to go to Labour full-time. And we would certainly like to thank her officially on the record for the commitment she had to the Portfolio Committee of Trade and Industry, and wish her well in her work in Labour. I'm not yet sure if she is the chair or the whip, and when we have that information, we will address it. We also have deployed to this committee in her place the Honourable Matlobo, Mr. MD. And I was hoping he would be here today, and we will ask our study group administrator to clarify with the Office of the Chief Whip when exactly he will be joining this committee. All right? So those are the members attached to the committee. Then with respect to the actual agenda this morning, we would like to welcome the Office of the Auditor General, but perhaps before that, let us get the agenda adopted. We can just start this committee. We may not take any decisions, but we do have 4 members present. So, Honourable Buyani, you were proposing the adoption of the agenda, seconded by the Honourable Esterhazen. Right. Now, I understand, Honourable Esterhazen, you are not in energy any longer, is that it, or are you? To which committee are you now deployed as your second committee?
Energy is not sitting today.
No, but I mean, has your deployment changed?
No.
No.
So it is still energy, which is on a Wednesday, is it? Right. So on the apologies, Mr. Medima, will you please refer to them?
Morning. There are 2 apologies. One is for the Minister and the Deputy Minister. They are abroad on business. And Ms. Tlangwini, she's on medical apology. And Ms. Seko as well is on apology. She apologized as well. I'm getting that.
You know that we don't accept apologies unless we have the reason. So no apologies are accepted unless they are in writing or on your cell with the reason. Mr. Hermans?
Chairperson, Ms. Teko is attending Labour. They are busy with the minimum wage bill and she's attending that committee meeting today.
We still need a written apology to that effect. All right? And we have what other apologies? I heard you saying something about the DA.
Chair? I've received the SMS from Mr. McPherson that both he and Mr. Kachali is running late. They should be here shortly.
I just want to once again clarify to members, if you arrive within half an hour of the committee opening, you are then classified as attending the committee. Mm-hmm. We have received that late apology, unless there is some unforeseen traffic incident on the road on which you were travelling. Right, having done that, we certainly would wish to welcome the DTI in the first place, the DG, Mr. Lionel October. Thank you for being here. And my apologies for keeping you all late. I must say, chairpersons don't realize how much they rely on executive secretaries. They barely know how to work their equipment, or perhaps I should just speak for myself. And I do miss her very much. We have Mr. Shabir Khan, the Chief Financial Officer. Right, you there. Ms. Jodie Skulls, welcome back. Group Chief Operating Officer. Ms. Malebo Beachy Thompson, the DDG of IDAD, thank you. Mr. Garth Strachan, yes, I saw you there, glad you're still around, DDG IDD. Well, you know, people like Mr. Strachan and myself are part of the dinosaur age. Well, that's, I shouldn't say that about you, Mr. Strachan, should I? But I took the liberty. Then we have Mr. Nkosi Yomzi. Never seen such a name. Mr. Nkosi Yomzi. Is it Yom? Why? Thank you very much for that encouragement. Madula, the Chief Director ODG, the Office of the Director General, I'm assuming. Right? Then Mr. Eunice Hurson. See, my, oh, right, you're hiding there. Acting Head ISA. Then you are, that's Investment South Africa, is it? Right. And then Ms. Sarah Chuan, is it Chuan or Chuani? Chuani. DDG, it's got so many letters here, GSSSD. That stands for Group. Thank you. Then we have Mr. Sipo Zakodo, who is, I see here, may not be here. So he is definitely not here. And then Ms. Evelyn Masocha. Thank you. The DDG. Yes. CCRD. And Mr. Bangani Lukele, Director Media. Director Media. Oh, you're right there. And then Mr. Stephanus Bortus, Director TISA. Right. So, and we are going to, of course, be addressed, first of all, by the Office of the Auditor General, Mr. Chiapo Shabangu, Senior Manager for Audit of Trade and Industry. Thank you for your time and for your patience. So, I was rather hoping, members, and I'm looking at the membership now, that the Auditor General would have addressed all of us as members. Because, you know, we all need to be on board, and both members of the DA are not here. So, what I would like to ask the Auditor General, in fact, I'm addressing you directly, do you have the time to wait 5 minutes or so? 10 minutes, because I don't know what your diary is.
We don't have a problem, Honorable Chair.
Sometimes the flights, I know from experience, are somewhat unreliable, you know? Thank you. Because we can address something else in the committee as we just waiting a moment for that. Mm-hmm. And members, I will approach those members who aren't here separately, but as you know, my executive secretary is preparing to bring a new member of the human race into South Africa. And obviously, it's, you know, we're all very excited about the impending arrival of the new South African. But I wondered if perhaps members of the committee, considering she does help all of you from time to time. For one, she also from time to time prints our documents when administration runs out of toner. So if you can see yourselves clear on your personal budgets to making a contribution, I shall be, with the help of perhaps yourself, Olivia, Ms. Seabritz, draw up a sheet of paper in which people can write their name and the amount and the signature, and we will have a card that can be signed. All right. Do we all agree on that? On the principle, And I don't want to put how much, because I think that remains a personal choice. All right? So that's part of the committee business. The other part of the committee business, while we're waiting, is that we now know when the budget is going to be of DTI. And I think you gave it to us, Ms. Naidu. Is it the 15th of May? Of May. Right. When both ministers will be present. Is that correct? Yes. And, you know, as we look at this budget, it obviously may not have taken, and I use that advisedly, may not have taken into account some of the urgent resources that have come to our attention. And we say that because I'm sure, DG, during the course of the year, that will be addressed and we will be advised accordingly. That's how I see that. Thank you. Okay. You ask it. Right. Now, members, we did receive your apologies, Honourable Macpherson and Honourable Kachalia. Thank you very much for sending them. We also, along with yours, we received an apology from the Honourable Alberts due to late arrivals, and as I explained, flights and transport sometimes can be a challenge. Thank you for sending in your apologies. We did not want to start with the Auditor General until you came, so that you also had the briefing. And Honourable Implorable, his apology has just arrived. All right? So, Office... Pardon? So, thank... Yes, now... Mr. Shabangu, thank you for your understanding. Thank you. You may proceed.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Good morning, Honorable Members. Good morning to colleagues from DTI. I would also like to introduce my colleague from AG, Mr. Sizwe Ngumalo. He's actually the project manager of DTI. Thank you, Honorable Chair. The purpose of this presentation is just to share the high-level review that we did on the 2018-19 APP for DTI. These are some of the findings that we raised initially, but they were later addressed. And also, just to break down the presentation, the first few slides from slide 3 to slide 10 is just the background and the processes we follow when we review the APPs in advance. It's not actually an audit. And also to mention that whatever findings we pick up from these processes, they will be reported in the interim management report. However, they'll never form part of the final management report that will be issued on the 31st of July together with the audit report. So this is just a process to assist management to fix the APP going forward. In slides 11 to 15, we'll be focusing mainly on the actual review findings that we picked up during the process. And slide 16 to 22 is just a high-level review or reconciliation between the NDP, MTSF, as well as the strategy for DTI, where we tracked whether the outcomes are linked somehow or are cascading down to DTI's indicators and targets. And they were happy to say that we can link the specific outcomes from the NDP and MTSF down to DTI strategy and APP. And the last slide will be focusing on the status of records review, which is an initiative which we piloted I think in 2016-17, and we're starting to implement this year, where we highlight red flags to management before time. We're not saying we have to use colors. We're no longer using faces, smileys, and the frowns. But whatever status the department is in now, it's not saying that is cast in stone. We just say if certain things are not addressed in time, this might be the outcome at the end, to avoid surprises and pushbacks and so forth at the end of the year, at the end of the audit, and also to have a transparent process. Yeah, I think that's just a high-level background of this presentation. Yeah. Chair, I'm not sure how long do we have in terms of the time.
I'd like you to take sufficient time for us to get a solid, understanding of what you have done. So while we have technical issues here, which say till 10, it would certainly be till 10:30, given the time anyway. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Slide number 2 is just I'm sure you're familiar with this one, the reputation promise of the AG. And I've mentioned the purpose of this briefing, basically. Slide number 4, this one just takes you through the key considerations that we consider when we do the APP reviews, which I've already mentioned. And this is just for your own reading, Honorable Members. And I've already mentioned here that the findings will not form part of the current year's final management report and audit report. It's just a heads up to management. And slide number 6 is just the criteria we used to measure the targets and indicators. I think the chairperson, honorable chair, this is also for your own reading. And slide number 7, we just did a comparison between the current year budget being 2017-18 versus the 2018-19 budget, where we highlighted the movements, the increase and decrease in percentages. And slide number 8 focuses on the economic classification of the Department of Trade and Industry between current payments and transfers and subsidies, as well as on employee costs and the remaining budget. And here in slide number 9, we're just showing you the types of targets per selected program, whether they are annual, biannual, or quarterly targets. Chair, with your permission, I'll hand over to Mr. Ngumalo to take us through the detailed findings from slide 11 to 15.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chair. Good morning, honorable members and colleagues from the DTI. From slide 11, these are the detailed findings that we identified from the review of the 2018-19 APP. The first one was in Program 2, which is International Trade and Economic Development. The indicator was the number of status reports on global fora, and then in bracket it was, for example, BRICS, G20, AGOA, UK Brexit. So when we assess this indicator, the use of the word for example, it means the list is not exhaustive. So it means at the end of the year, the DTI can report on something which was not planned for at the beginning of the year. So hence we raised this issue to management to say the indicator in its current state is not well defined. The second one was found in Program 3, which is Special Economic Zones and Economic Transformation. The first indicator was the number of SEZ submitted to the Minister for Designation. So when we're reviewing the TID, we noted that the source and collection of data used for this specific indicator was not relevant to this specific indicator. For example, it was saying formal intervention to potential market and letter signed by the DDG, of which it does not relate to this specific indicator. So it affects the validation process and systems that produces the indicator, since these documents are not relevant to this particular process. The second one in Program 3 was the number of implementation reports on industrial parks submitted to the minister. So what we noted here is when we were reviewing the TID, under the calculation type, it was saying non-cumulative. So a measurement of the target will be non-cumulative. And we further engaged with management. And then we noted that the annual target which is planned for the year, it's 2. So meaning the calculation type of non-cumulative is not relevant to this specific indicator, since the reports that will be produced in a year will be summed up or added at the end of the year to come up with 2. It won't be a matter of we have a report, let's say, after quarter 2, and then we update that report at year end, and then ultimately we have 1 report. So the use of having an annual target of 2, it means the target is cumulative. We're going to accumulate, we're going to add those 2 reports which were produced in the year for the annual target. And the third one under Program 3 was the number of interventions to support BIs in the IPEP sectors, non-financial and financial. So the first thing that we noted when we reviewed the TID was the word intervention was defined as inclusive but not limited to market access and capacity and training. So the list is not exhaustive because it means we can DTI can also include additional considerations when they report at year end. So the word of using inclusive but not limited to, so it means the list is not exhaustive. So that's what we identified. The second thing we noted is on the indicator title, in bracket it was saying It's going to be non-financial and financial financial support. But when we compared that to the target was only speaking about non-financial, and then we went to the TID, and then it was speaking about non-financial. So there was a bit of inconsistency between the TID and the indicator title and the target. So we raised that to management. So under program six, on the indicator number of jobs retained from approved enterprises, what we noted is the current 2017-18, this indicator is written as projected number of jobs retained. But on the 18-19, it changed to the number of jobs retained from approved enterprises. So it's on a basis of actuals. But when management was determining the baseline, they used quarter three report for 2017-18, of which it was measuring projected number of jobs retained, not the actual. So we said, no, the baseline use is not reliable since the target and indicator has changed from 2017-18 to 18-19. So that's what we raised here. And then the second thing was number of enterprises or projects approved for financial support across all incentives. What we noted when we were reviewing the face of the APP is that this indicator was written as a new indicator. But when we also reviewed the 17-18 APP, we noted that that indicator was also included this year. So to put it as a new indicator was misleading. So we raised that issue. And then under Program 7, which is Trade Investment South Africa, the same thing like the previous one was, we had an indicator written as new in the APP, but when we checked the 17-18-19, it was also there, so even this one was misleading. And then in overall across all programs, except the two that I just spoke about, the Framework for Strategic Plans and Annual Performance Plan, it has certain criteria on the TID that we need to include. And one of them is we need to state if the indicator is new or significantly changed or it didn't change from prior year. So what we noted is on the TID, the current TIDs that we reviewed, they did not incorporate that part, except the two indicators that I just spoke about, where on the face of the APP, they noted that this is a new indicator, of which it was not a new indicator. So in overall, we identified this across all programs that they do not have that criteria, whether it's new, significantly changed, or it did not change from prior year. Slide 16, it's basically what Mr. Serpo mentioned at the beginning of the presentation, that we did a high-level comparison from the NDP, MTSF, strategic, and the APP. So on a high level, we were comfortable of the link from the NDP up to the annual performance plan. So this goes to 17, 18. And then from 19 to 22, it was just showing our record of work done on that aspect, taking each and every criteria from MTSF and then linking it to the APP. And then the last slide, it's focusing on the status of records review. I think Mr. Sepo gave the background on the document and the intention behind the document. So the first thing that we noted was on performance management. So the issues that were identified in the 18-19 APP, what we capturing here is if these issues are not corrected, they might affect the audit report in the next financial cycle. So that's what we were bringing into we were alerting our management on. And the second thing is we've noted during the year that the internal audit division has raised a couple of findings on reliability of reported information on the quarterly reports. So what we said here is that if this continues toward year end, it might affect the reliability of the information on the annual performance report, of which we're going to audit at the end of the year. The second thing was on oversight and monitoring. We noted that a couple of policies are not reviewed and updated on a regular basis or when there is a change in legislation. Just to put that into context, since under procurement and contract management, we flagged that as yellow, what we said is part of the policies, the SCM policy has not incorporated the new PPR, preferential procurement regulation. So we said let's flag that one out, since SCM it's utmost important in the public sector. So the yellow is not based on the actual findings which we raised during the interim audit. We're still busy with that process. It was basically on us just stripping out that SCM policy issue. And the last one was human resource management. What we noted was there were officials who have acted for more than 12 months, which is in contravention with the public service regulations. So we said let's flag that to management and then bring it to their attention. Thank you, Chair.
Is that the Office of the Auditor General concluded?
Yes, Chairperson, Honourable Chair.
Right. So, members, basically then, we've had that briefing. Now, I think it may be pertinent for us to engage at this point. Can we see, by a show of hands, the Honourable Williams, the Honourable MacPherson? I don't see any other hands. Honourable Easterhuizen, Honourable Buyani.
Thank you, Chair. I'd like to thank the Auditor General for giving us that report. I don't know what to do here, Chair. Fundamentally, Chairperson, we're going to ask questions to the Auditor General, not about the report, to the DTI. Is that correct, Chairperson? So, well, in that case then, I don't have any clarity questions. I think it's quite clear, but I do want to engage the department on this report. So when can we do that?
After the briefing from the department. You see, they will be responding to this report for us, and then we can check with them. So may I suggest, if you don't need directly to get any clarification from the Auditor General's office, they will be remaining here, but the DTI will give their report. So I gave you the right.
I'd just like then, in that case, then I do have one question. On slide 14, indicator number 3, it says the number of jobs retained from approved enterprises. Is that 20,000? I'd just like to know that, you know, when you say the baseline used is not reliable. I just want some clarity on that. What do you mean it's not reliable? Is it, you know, what are you saying here? Because from the whole report, there's many incidents where it says the information is not reliable or performance indicators are not well defined. So these sort of things, it makes the actual the targets for me seem a little bit irrelevant. I just want to know, you know, can we rely on this information that the department's given us? Thank you.
Williams, Honourable MacPherson, did you want to engage?
You see, the problem that I have is much like the Honourable Williams, in that, you know, I actually want to engage the department on this and separately on their presentation, because I actually don't want to conflate the two. So I would really ask, Chair, that we can just have a discussion with the DG just specifically on this document.
He will be clarifying it in his briefing, and I think that's far better then to engage. That's why I said unless it was specifically on what the Auditor General has put in and we needed a clarification, then we will move to the briefing of the DG. Right, so let's move to the briefing of the DG then. Thank you. Honourable Williams? Oh, you asked a question. Thank you. Office of the Auditor General, will you respond, either one of you?
Thanks, Honourable Members. What we were highlighting here is just to to give you background, the 2017-18 APP for the current year, that indicator is written as projected number of jobs retained from approved enterprises. So now going to 18-19, the indicator changed now to number of jobs retained from approved enterprises. So when looking at the two indicators, the current year, which is 17-18-19, it's talking about projected numbers, and then 18-19 now is talking about actual actual numbers, taking away the projected factor into the equation. And in determining that baseline, the DTI used, I think it was quarter three reported information for 17-18, of which it was based on projected number of jobs retained, not the actual number of jobs retained from approved enterprises. So we were saying there is no link between the two indicators. It's like the indicator changed from this year to the following year. So using a baseline for the current year, we found it as not a reliable baseline to use for the 18-19 APP period. So that's what we were highlighting here.
So, yes, Honourable Williams?
Can I also get clarity on indicator four, where you say that it's misleading, that in other words, then the department was misleading, and also anywhere where you've said this, because it seems to me that there's, throughout this report, that it talks about that the information that the department gave is either the indicator is misleading or it's not complete. So I'm a little bit concerned about what we're about to hear from the department. Is that also going to be misleading us? I mean, what exactly is the Auditor General saying? Is the department trying to mislead Parliament? That's what I want to know. Thank you.
Right. Office of the Auditor General.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I think there is the use of the witty English. When we said, they said the indicator is new, while it was not new, I think a better way would be to say it's incorrect to say that, instead of misleading.
Honourable Biani?
Chairperson, thanks. Maybe I'm in the same challenge with my Honourable Williams here, because also there are concerns on page 23 in terms of the performance management. It indicates that quarter two and three, the department report information that is not reliable in the IPR, then it's really disturbing why the information is not reliable. You cannot trust on the information whether this thing happened or not as an AG. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honourable Biani, Office of the Auditor General.
Thanks, Honourable Member. Yeah. Here we were just highlighting because in a year, on a quarterly basis, the department will do a quarterly performance report. So what we identified is because the internal audit will look at that quarterly report, and the internal audit identified some issues where what is reported does not tie up with the supporting document on the floor. So that's what we said no, let's raise it to management to say that we are now at going to the 31st of March where we're going to prepare the annual performance report. So we need to try and limit the number of errors which were contained in the quarterly report before it was checked by the internal audit.
Is that acceptable, Honourable Biani?
Chairperson, it's not clear. Because really, I wanted to check whether the information given in terms of the performance management is not reliable at all now. If not, there are any proposal or suggestion for the department to do so that this promotion becomes reliable to the AG. Thank you.
Oh, thanks, Honourable Member. I think at this stage, the information, because after the internal audit have checked and then raised their issues, the information was corrected. So it is reliable. But what we were saying is before the internal audit checked the performance report, there were a couple of issues that they identified. But after they identified those issues, so the quarterly reports were corrected. So basically what we want to raise here is saying, if we had that issue during the year, we just need to make sure that at year end, when we're doing the quarterly reports, even before the internal audit, at least they will be off 100% stage.
Yes, Honorable Buyani.
Thanks, Chair. Maybe we'll hear from the department. Thanks.
Yes, I think there comes a time when, you know, we let it be and we seek clarification through another route. But thank you for your understanding, Honorable Buyani. And then we're going to I think then you need to swap seats or not. I'm checking with staff. Yes. During that process, I shall be asking Honorable Williams to take over the chair for 5 minutes, please. Conscious as I am that we need to apply our minds all the time.
Thank you, DG. You can proceed with your presentation.
Thanks, Chair. I take it that we're providing our annual performance plan, and then in terms of the earlier discussion, we will then we've got our group service, our group COO here, and we have our chief financial officer. And they will actually clarify in some detail. But as you're aware, the DTI received a clean audit and 10 of its entities received clean audits. So what we do have is we have a rigorous process for managing performance system. And what we do is it goes through a process from the division and then to a committee chaired by the GCOO. Who looks at this information, it goes to internal audit, and then it goes to the Auditor General. And out of that, then, we come with a product, which, as I said, has been checked, verified, and so on. And then it is out of that we always then get, we get a clean audit, because, as you know, the verification goes through a rigorous process. I will then also deal with some of the issues raised about proposals about labor, measuring labor and employment in the course of the presentation. But as you know, we will give economic context. We will then just briefly look at what is our strategic goals and what we are trying to measure, and then we will look at the APP, what are the interventions we've put in, and we'll also see how it links to the budget, and to that means our resources. And so just in terms of getting into the detail, economic context is always important, the reason being that unlike being, for example, a Department of Housing or where your targets are very clear and definitely, and sometimes, let's say, unchanging. You have to build 1 million houses over 5 years, invariably change. Economics is obviously a completely different thing, where you have to be dynamic and you have to change depending on the situation. There could be a drought, there could be a steel crisis, and then you have to adapt your strategy. So we will see, that's why our performance measures and everything is based on being a dynamic department to change with regards to different domestic and international considerations. So the economic context has changed quite significantly from our report last year. Firstly, if you look at the globe, there is a general improvement in the global economy.
and everybody from IMF, World Bank have revised global growth rates upwards, 3.9. What is also good about the current period is that it is a broad-based growth both in the advanced economies like in the US and Europe, but also in the developing economies are also growing. So you have synchronized growth for the first time. And then in addition to that, we also have, as you know, a number of sub-Saharan economies have been in recession, Angola, Nigeria and others. For the first time now, I think we see again broad-based growth in sub-Saharan Africa, predicted to be 3.3%. And then, as you know, recently you had a divergence between global growth and domestic growth. And it looks like that is also changing. And just in the recent quarter, we see South Africa's growth prospects are improving, and therefore we report that even National Treasury has to revise our growth rates. As you know, we predicted 1% growth or less. They now forecast growth to be 1.5%, 1.8% and 2.1% in the 2018, 2019 and 2020. So that is a different context we will be operating in. If we look closer to home at the manufacturing sector, which is really what DTI is about, is that we also see an improvement in manufacturing. We see improvement in agriculture, actually a massive improvement in agriculture as we emerge from the drought, and if we look at manufacturing again, the PMI, as you know, is an index where 50% below 50 means people expect a decline in manufacturing production. Above 50 means expansion. And as you can see, for the first time, we are hitting over the 50 mark. And that indicates that generally manufacturers, purchasing managers in the manufacturing sector expects positive growth in the manufacturing sector. So that, again, is important in our context. As you can see, unfortunately, if we look backwards, we're still facing a jobs crisis, and the unemployment rate has actually deteriorated. And then finally, if I can just quickly touch on global trade, as you can see, our growth in exports has been in expanding, and slowly we are closing our trade deficit. As you know, South Africa's Achilles heel has always been, as soon as our services sector expands, we import a lot, and then we run into balance of payments problems. That has always choked off our growth. So one of our strategic goals is obviously to see that we reduce that trade gap, something that, as you know, Donald Trump is now really concerned about, is the American trade deficit and its impact on growth. So I'll leave it at that and then go. As I said, we always repeat this issue because we need to know that all of our activities, all our hundreds of performance measures is aimed at one objective, which is to create a dynamic, industrial and globally competitive economy. And especially the word there is competitive, because I will come to an issue raised later about are we sort of, when we support companies, we upgrade their machinery and equipment to be world-class, competitive, but sometimes it means they do employ less labor directly when they bring in new. But as I said, we will show that you have to be competitive as an economy and as companies. And if you fall behind with the level of technology, those companies will close down. So our incentives are aimed at ensuring that we have a dynamic and competitive economy. Again, the strategic goals, and you will see all the APPs I will go through, is aimed at one of these strategic goals. So what is our goals? Our goals is A, to create an industrial-based economy. Secondly, to promote regional and global relations so that we can expand our value-added exports. That's two. Number three, we want to overcome the legacy and ensure that the entire population participates in the economy. So that's broad-based economic empowerment. And then we also have a fourth goal, which is, and this is our CCRD, company regulations and so on, consumer regulations. We need to create a proper, fair regulatory environment. And then finally, in order to implement industrial policy, which is very, very complex, you need a professional and highly dynamic administration. We've divided all our programs and all our goals into eight areas, and just, Chair, if I could just mention the new ones here. As you know, now we have, we created a new program, Program 8, which is Investment South Africa, which is a one-stop clearinghouse for investors. That is a new program, Invest SA. And then also, so we created the Trade and Investment South Africa is now mainly focused on exports. So so that is the new programs and so on. Then turning then to the key interventions. I will deal with the different themes and different areas. The first one is industrial development, which is the heart and core of the DTI. So there, as you know, we're in our 10th year now, but the way we try to intervene in the manufacturing sector to stimulate that manufacturing sector, we have created the mechanism of developing annual industrial policy plans. And in this way, we ensure that they are dynamic. As you know, other countries have five-year plans. We have annual plans, and the reason for that is that because we need to adapt to a changing situation. And therefore, this has worked well for us, and therefore our key, you will see our key performance measure is that every year we go through a rigorous process through the cluster, through cabinet, and every plan is endorsed and gone through a rigorous process. We also set a clear target in terms of our incentive programs. We set a target, and here I want to, I'll explain later on why we set an investment target, and then that's 15 billion, and why that's the most important target. Then in terms of projected jobs, and here we obviously use the word advisably, because when we provide an incentive to a company, they tell us what they expect their jobs to be. And we then also say what is the projected number of jobs which is created. As you know, in terms of the World Bank, and it's not us, a job in manufacturing leads to four other jobs. That is because once you produce a motor vehicle, for example, you need hundreds of different parts into that motor vehicle. You need steel, you need tires, you need everything. So that means you need to buy from other places, so you create jobs upstream. Once you produce that vehicle, you need to transport that vehicle, and you create a transport company and so on. So you create jobs in the services sector, you create jobs in the upstream sector. So that's why manufacturing is so key, because it is the only one. And that's why they use the term derived labor. You create jobs throughout your value chain and so on. So those are our targets. And then we also, the final big target we have is that the number of enterprises and projects and companies we want to support is 850. Now, as I said, we have been explaining this, that these are the kinds of targets we've thought through, and we will be able to, as I said, maybe in questions, explain to you why we arrived at these kinds of targets. But let me just maybe say up front, the DTI has been running programs for more than 30 years. And we used to have other kinds of incentives. For example, we had a labor-based incentives, and we also had export-based incentives. All of those programs we had, for example, GEIS, which ran from 1990 to 1997, it was closed down because of massive corruption and fraud, because, as I said, the indicator we used was exports. And as you know, we also used another indicator, labor. And as you remember well, with areas like Atlantis, and so on, companies would then move their factory for 7 years while they got the labor incentive. Once the labor incentive stopped, they closed down that factory. So labor incentive labor-based incentives is not doesn't work. It hasn't worked in South Africa, and it hasn't worked across the world. And as I said, that's why we use different kinds of more sophisticated indicators. We then set out here in terms of, we also link up how it is linked to the National Development Plan. We also, it's linked into government's MTSF program, but we lay out here, for example, it links to outcome 4 of the medium-term strategic framework, which is government's overall 5-year plan. And then also, as you can see in column 1, we say what is the strategic objective we're trying to achieve. 1, we're trying to grow the manufacturing sector to promote development, job creation, investment. What is our 5-year target? Our 5-year target is to produce 5 annual rolling IPAPs and so on. And then what is our performance indicator? And here, as I said, this indicator has sort of been refined and cleared more clearly. And here it is that the department develops a plan annually and then submits it to the minister, who takes it to cabinet and so on. And then what we say is we have the minister's monthly meetings where we assess the implementation of this plan. Monthly meetings, and then we table quarterly reports. And this is also then attended by other ministers and other departments where we can look at, because we're trying to develop an industrial policy for the country and so on. So those are our performance indicators and so on. As I said, it is the after years of getting into this thing, we're now 10th year now, and it is undoubted that this IPAP has had an impact, which I will show later. But you can see those are indicators for that one. Then the another indicators, as you know, our biggest way of growing the manufacturing sector is what we call create demand through localization, and we use the instrument of designations. A designation is something where we take an area, for example, like we did clothing and textiles, and we say that must be bought and produced in South Africa. So, for example, before SAA could decide to buy, or the SANDF could buy its uniforms anywhere in the world, we designate that product, which means all SOEs, all government departments must buy locally. And that is, for example, we've created over the period 22 designations, and that is how, for example, we revived the clothing industry, because we created localization and the instrument is the designation. So what we will say is, see there, we will issue a 12 designations over the 5-year period. And that is roughly 2.4 designations per year we will create. So as I said, our instrument there is to create demand for manufacturing sector. This is a non-supply side measure. We create demand, and our instrument that we will measure is the 12 designations over the 5-year period, and roughly 2.4 per year, and so on. We look then at quarterly milestones, and that is presented there, and we set that out for you. We also set out what we've achieved so far, and then at the bottom we then look at our budget and how that is aligned to our budget. And as you know, every a year we interact with Treasury, where we then put in our requests for budgets and we give our performance to date, and that lays out that our budget is aligned for that. I want to then just, in terms of explaining context, I just want to show is over the past period, how we've came to the system of an IPAP, is that we will be in this year releasing our IPAP. It's busy in the cluster process at the moment. It will be going to cabinet in the next 2 or 3 weeks. And we are also, it's the 10th year of our IPAP. And we have made some analysis, and there you can see, if we just look at, for example, and Chair, I know you're very interested in this issue, for example, in the automotive industry. What we've done so far, this sector is so important. It's 33% of the manufacturing, and it makes up 6% of GDP. We produce now 600,000 vehicles a year in our automotive industry and 113,000 skilled jobs. And as you know, if you take it that one job creates four other jobs, that's almost 500,000 jobs that is created through the automotive industry. We also see, and this is our major tool we use, there was $45 billion of worth of new investment in the sector. And Chair, what we must really follow is this investment level, because that determines how many jobs you have, and it also determines how much you produce. Now, if you compare that to, example, for Australia, they've completely lost their entire auto industry. So there's zero investment in Australia for automotive. So, and therefore you will see it's jobs. What we need to look at jobs is at the overall level and not at the company level. And as I said there, it is 113. And that is our target that we always monitor, is overall employment levels in the industry that we can create. And we don't try to micromanage at each company how to hire or fire or how much workers to have. That system has never worked where you can micromanage employment at the company level. You must try to create an industrial policy to support sectors. Finally, I'll just quickly show what we achieved through our IPAP in the clothing and textile sector. As you know, again, the sector is important, makes up just under 3% of GDP. But also, this sector, we, as you know, before we introduced this program, was in the rapid decline, lost tens of thousands of jobs. It now employs 95,000 workers in the clothing and textile sectors. So our policy is creating jobs, not only in its own sector, but also upstream and downstream. And then this is also shown, for example, 22 new leather factories that have been opened because of this program and so on. So I want to make an argument later that we are using the correct instrument of having an annual IPAP, which we must continue for the next 10 years, we are proposing, and that our indicator, because it's a dynamic, don't just set the one target or two targets and so on. You have to analyze it every year, renew it every year, and also assess it on a quarterly basis. That's the only way you can have a dynamic industrial policy. Then turning to the incentive program, there, this is, as you said, program 6 is IDAD, the Incentive Development and Administration, and there we set out the number of investments that we do. Honorable Chair, as I explained when you were out, we have moved from measuring labor to measuring investment. Because as you know, as I explained earlier, when we used to target investment and base the incentive on jobs, companies used to create those jobs for 7 years. And then we met the targets every year in DTI. As I said, we ran this program from 1990 to 1997. Every year we met the target because the Rex Trueform would simply take its workers from the Salt River plant, put them in Atlantis, and they do it. On the seventh year, when the incentive stops, the company just closes down that factory. And that's why you had such a mess in our industrialized areas and so on. Labor subsidies, labor incentive doesn't work. What we do is a better system, is that we co-invest with an employer. If an employer commits to investment and they give a value of, let's say, $100 million, we will then develop, let's say, an incentive. We give you 1 to 4. So we put in that amount, and then what we do is we have an inspectorate system where you only get the incentive if we see that you have installed the new machinery and equipment. What we then verify with that, and that's why we have zero corruption in our system, we ensure that you yourself have put in 3/4 or 4/5 of the money yourself, and you've taken the risk, which means it's a sustainable business. You've got your own money at risk. And say, for we know you will buy the proper machinery, and therefore we want to see it switched on, because as you know, before, under the GEIS program, As you know, the minister of, at that time, Trevor Manuel, closed down that program because after he went to the factories, there was nothing to be seen. And so on. So we have a rigorous program. So that's why we used investment as our key measure to say whether we give you an incentive or not. We do that. Again, Adam Chair, jobs is a difficult indicator to measure because jobs is what they call in economics a derived demand. It is dependent on the overall demand for the product. So if people buy wheat and the demand for wheat increases, wheat farmers take on more workers, but they take them on only because there's an expansion in demand for the main product. So as I said, it fluctuates all the time. For example, our current manufacturing sector is running at 81% capacity utilization. That means there isn't demand for 100% of what they could produce. So therefore, as I said, your main measurement we put is investment. We then lay out there the quarterly reports and what are our targets on a quarterly basis. And then, as you know, in terms of the budget then, we've broken up our incentives. And as I said, it's highly targeted. It is a very complex area, but we have our incentives. So we have broadening participation incentives. We have manufacturing incentives. For example, the MSEP is a manufacturing incentive. We have service investment incentives. That is, for example, your BPO, your call centers, your film industry. That would be your service centers. Your infrastructure incentives. That would be for your SEZs and your industrial parks. And then you have partnerships and so on. So BP incentives could be your Black Industrialist Program and so on. And then, as you know, the bulk of the money, just over 5 billion, is dedicated to our incentives. And as you know, all of these incentives are conditional, and it's based on the principle of reciprocity, which means you must commit. In terms of employment, we do set that you must give us a baseline, and you must at least maintain your employment during the period of the incentive. So that is how we ensure that we don't we have job creation still in the system, but we use it as a baseline, and you must do that. The other one we make it conditional on now is that you must have a certain level of Black economic empowerment. In that way, we shift to we have conditionalities, and we ensure reciprocity for our incentives. Again, then very quickly, the highlights of how these incentives have worked previously and why we use the current methodology. As you know, the MSEP created, and we saved large part of our manufacturing sector during the recession and during the global downturn, and we attracted value from companies of 30 billion rand. We also launched the aquaculture incentive. This was to revive to build a new infant industry in aquaculture. Fish farming, as they call it. There we did that. And then this is, again, a success story of our incentives. We introduced this incentives, let's say, also about 8-10 years ago. This industry now supports 43,000 jobs of young people, and it has developed 24 billion of export revenue. As you know, this is very labor intensive. You go into call centers. We launched one here in Maitland recently, 2,000-3,000 young people in these call centers. Then turning to our next interventions, which is into the area of trade, investment, and exports. Here, as you know, we have created a one-stop shop facility where we have all departments, SARS, Home Affairs, water licensing, all in one in one center. And we have so far 3 centers, and there our target we've said is 50 billion is our pipeline of investments that we want to attract in this period. So that is our target. Then also, as you know, we want to grow our markets. We've concluded and we need to monitor progress. But our biggest ones that we've currently completed so far now is the European Partnership Agreement, the EPA. We've got the SACU India PTA. And then the big one, which has just been completed, or we are really in the final stages, is the SADC East African Community COMESA, the Tripartite Free Trade Area. And there we hope to submit the two status reports on that. And then currently the reason some of our DGGs are not here, and the minister is not here, and the deputy minister is not here, they are all in Kigali, in Rwanda, for the Continental Free Trade Area negotiations, and we will be signing the first stage of that agreement. So we have been, that is our trade negotiations. As you know, we also participate in, let's say there's four areas we've identified. We've taken the AG's point that we were very misleading to use the word example in there, but we've taken out the word example. So we've said that the four areas we will be reporting on is BRICS, because as you know, that's our big markets, the G20, AGOA. As you know, AGOA is very, very, we've won it for 10 years, but it's very, we've got to keep it going all the time. And then obviously there's the UK, the Brexit issue, where they will be out of the European Union in 2020, and we will we have to get a new agreement to preserve our access to this very important market. So those are the bilateral engagements we will be submitting reports on. And so on. As you know, we're making a big push with our EMEA program, and we hope to support. This is a big program. We've just taken a group of black industrialists to Mozambique last week. The program we use is EMEA. This is where we allow people to go and explore new markets new export markets. We hope to support 823 companies under this program, and again, this program has been a success over the years, and we want to continue that. So we then set out there in the detail. Chair, the reason we give status reports is because before we got about 6-7 years ago, we used to say that, for example, WTO, we will complete the development round of the WTO. And then, as you know, whether you have a development round at WTO depends on 180 countries. As you know, it has taken 10 years to get that going, and it's not even still achieved and so on. All we can do as a country is that we obviously go there with very concrete ideas. We make our inputs there, and we try to steer it in a particular direction. In any trade negotiation, that can be your only objective. What we then do is that we undertake to report, and we report to Cabinet, and we report to our Minister, and we provide status reports on the state of these negotiations. Then out of those status reports, people can tell us, you're going in the right direction, you're going in the wrong direction, do this, don't do that, and so on. There's nothing more you can do, but you cannot set specific objectives. So therefore, status report is the only reporting tool you can do. It's a lot like our annual IPAP. Yep. You see, you can do it, and then you assess it after 1 year, you improve it, you change it, and so on. But if you say you're going to produce 100,000 vehicles, and then, as I said, something happens, or then you can't achieve that, so you have to set it. So that is that's in the trade talks, and we've
Honourable MacPherson. Honourable MacPherson. Mm-hmm. Will you switch your phone off or down, please? And do not make a call while the committee is going on, please.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
Yes. I was making a point about the reason we provide the status reports. That allows us then, especially, for example, if you take the Brexit negotiations, There is a lot of uncertainty. For example, most of our Toyotas from the Durban plant goes to the UK market, not to the as I said, it's via the EU agreement, but most of it goes to the United Kingdom. And as you know, when Brexit, when they leave the European Union, we will not have that automatically that access to the UK market. So we need to preserve the same arrangements that we have with the European Union with the UK. So that's why what we've done is we've already started negotiations with the UK. Our ministers have met, and we report. We will be reporting quarterly, or we will provide a status report on the UK-South Africa negotiations. And as I said, the only instrument we can do is to promise you that we will give you a status report, and then you can ensure that we are doing enough to ensure, as I said, frictionless access to the UK market, and that explains that indicators. Similarly, for the G20, we have the same issue. The steel crisis we're using the G20 as the forum to ensure that there's a resolution to the global steel glut. And that is our forum, and therefore we will provide a status report on the G20 as well, and those four areas, G20, BRICS, the Brexit issue, and then of course, as you know, AGOA is always under threat. And currently, as we're speaking, we've asked for exemption from the steel and aluminium tariffs. And, of course, they will link that to the AGOA talks and so on. Then the budget, Honourable Chair, you can see then the budget is aligned to our objectives there. In terms of TISA, that is the export sales, we've set targets for how we're expanding export sales. And then most importantly, we're setting out the number of companies that we will support under the EMEA, and there we have, for example, the 823 companies. We lay that out, and then we lay out the budget for this area. Honourable Chair, if you again look at the what we've done over, as I said, these programs have been around for some time, and we've constantly improved them. Since its establishment, we've assisted 5,000 companies with their export marketing assistance under this program. And then we provide the number of jobs retained and so on. And you will see all that in more detail in the next IPAP, which is coming out in the next few weeks. Investment South Africa, there we lay out our pipeline of projects for that, and there our target is 50 billion rand of investment, and as you know that there's been a number of big investments recently, and we expect those trends to go, but we provide now a seamless service to those investors. Again, then the budget is laid out. As I indicated, this is a new program, and we support Invest SA, a new institution we created. This is just an overview of investment over the period. Then turning to broadening participation, as you know, there are two or three big programs under this one. The one is the special economic zones. We hope to in this financial year. As you know, we've got eight special economic zones already. We hope to submit a further for the period one more SEZ, and hopefully that will be in Mpumalanga, and then we've got one in Northwest as well that is busy working on. So a minimum of one SEZ we will be expanding. As you know, our target is to have a SEZ in every province. And we don't have in three provinces. We don't have in Mpumalanga, we don't have in Northwest, and we don't have in Northern Cape. So that is where we're heading. Then implementation of the BEE Act is also under this program, and we hope to table two reports to the minister. And then there's the Black Industrialist Program. Under this division, as I said, this part is the one earlier we dealt with the issue of incentives. That is where we give financial support to the black industrialists. This one is non-financial support. And as you know, it is actually the more important one because it's the one that, because it's no use having all the machinery and fancy equipment and you can't sell your product. So the biggest intervention here is we get market access for black industrialists with our SOEs, and then we've taken them to Namibia and Mozambique, where we do different interventions to create a market and for them to export. So these are a number of interventions we will make for our black industrialist program. Then we set out here the number of SEZs for, as I said, one SEZ every year we will have under this program, and then also the industrial parks. This is now, as I said, this is a new program that has been implemented. We've so far helped 8 industrial parks. So what we plan here, Chair, and this is we're having a big, we've asked the AG for a discussion on this, how do we measure this target? And as I said, if the year we've told them, let's sit down, let's discuss this and how we do it. Because as I said, do you measure the investment levels in the industrial park? Do you measure the infrastructure you put in and so on? And as I said, we have proposed that because every industrial park differs, some of them are completely been run down for the past 20 years. There's nothing there like in Dimbaza, and we need to revitalize it completely. What we've proposed again is that we say we're going to give status reports, implementation reports on what we do on that one. But as I said, we are open for discussion on these things, but we mustn't be... as I said, we mustn't set unrealistic targets or targets which have no relation to the work, and targets which can easily be manipulated and lead to corruption and so on. We then turn to the Black the BE program, and there again, as I said, what we've done under the BE program, we've established the BE commission, submitted the business plan, and then what we say going forward. We will, again, we will submit the reports on the implementation of BEE. But as you know, we are very active in this area, and we will then table updates on that. And similarly with the black industrial, with helping black industrialists, again, a new program. We are now opening a new frontier, which is the non-financial support. And there again, we for example, develop trade missions now. We've also set up another intervention is we directly engage on Friday, Sipho Sikode launch with the SOEs, with Eskom and Transnet, where we're trying to have bilateral agreements where they will ensure that they buy from black industrialists and so on, and not just from other people across the seas. Then we've got our, as I said, we've laid out those, and then the budget is presented here for this program. And then also, as I said, a lot of this is not financially based. It is support based, and for example, the BE Act and so on. Then again, you can see what these annual designations do. If you look at it over a long period, you can see what we achieve, because, as you know, to make an economic intervention takes, in any case, an investment takes 2-3 years to bring to fruition. It's difficult to measure it over a year and so on, but you see the effects of the time. So here, for example, is our SEZ. So far, we have 8 zones that have been designated by the minister and the president. We've got Saldanha, Dube Trade Port, Oor Tambo, Kuga, East London, Richards Bay, Malutia, Pofong, in the Free State, and Musina in Limpopo. Kuga, as you know, has turned the corner. It's now a black elephant. It is $12 billion under construction there. The big Beijing Automotive Works is nearing completion of the automotive plant. In there, and then there's also many, many call centers, others there. Dube Trade Port is also now doing very well, turning the corner. I have a pipeline of $1.8 billion. That's the one where we have the Samsung, and Samsung will be expanding as well. Then Richards Bay is also turned the corner. Malutia Pofong, Atlantis already, it's already sitting on an investment of 600-800 million. As you know, The company, Hisense, has produced its millionth TV set in Atlantis. Its second most efficient plant globally. So that is, as I said, that is from our... So Atlantis will now be a SEZ. The application will be done. And then we've got also the new one, which is Messina Mercado. This just gives you a look at what we've done over the years on the, very recent years, the Black Industrialist Program, 78 projects that we've supported so far. As you know, the target, which we will need to reach in the next few days, is the 100 Black Industrialists, but as I said, this is for the last quarter. And then 11 industrial parks have already been upgraded, and that will be continuing. Then I turn to the final sections on our work in the regulatory area. As you know, we will be we are busy engaged with four pieces of legislation. It's the gambling, the liquor, the credit, the performance, and the copyright amendment bills. So we will also be developing one CS, because we will also be bringing amendments to the Companies Act, the Companies Amendment Bill, and then also a big part of implementing these acts is education, and we will be engaging in 24 education and awareness workshops, and especially, as you know, the big one is going to be now consumer awareness, given the recent outbreaks of listeriosis and others, but big education workshops for companies now on implementing these acts. This sets out our targets for which when we will do CS reports, which bills we will be dealing with, and that is all specified in this performance agreement and indicators. As I indicated, those are the bills, and this gives you some historical context. The budget there, again, is mainly in the area of policy and legislative development, and then also enforcement and compliance, and there we set out our budget that we have for this year. As you know, this also has to be dynamic, because, as you know, you have given us the task now of beefing up the credit regime, which means we have to expand the capacity of the credit regulator, both its enforcement function and its assistance to vulnerable groups. So, as I said, but we will be working within these budgets, but we will adapt it as we go along. Then turning to the final one, which is the administration. As I said, all the other work is dependent on having a highly skilled and professional staff to be able to implement industrial policy. The targets we have there is staff turnover, 6.8%, employing people with disabilities, 3.6%, and then women in senior management position there. Our target is 50%, and then with regards to creditor payments there, our target and indicator is 30 days. So we set that out there, and where we at, as I said, we started off in 2014 when we set the target. We didn't achieve it because we were at 47. We went to 49. And then finally we broke the glass ceiling. And as you know, even currently now we are at 50% women in our top leadership in management. So that also we hope to maintain that target. And then obviously in a few years' time we can... we can then change that target again, but it just shows what it is to be able to set a target and then progressively work towards it, and then we can adapt the target. Similarly, with creditor payments, as you know, throughout the years, when we have received all our audits, we 100% achieve we achieve our targets within 30 days, and as I said, we achieved most of them in 15 days, actually. But our target, in line with the general government, is 30 days. But That is another indicator where a proper target was set and an entire system has been developed, where the DTI system, our chief financial officer, has gone through other departments at the request of the presidency for us to use the same system in other government departments, which we developed around ensuring suppliers are paid within 30 days. And so on. So, Chair, that's there. We, as I said, we do have a high retention rate in the DTI, and so we have maintained those sets of target, and the budget is set out there. And as you know, there are serious constraints now on our employment budget. As I said, we have taken all that into account and done our planning properly. And as you know, over the years, we have put a cap on our staff and we have reduced significantly and we've reprioritized certain areas and so on. So again, Honourable Chair, again, we can go in more detail. But as you know, our budget has been increasing over the years. But then it has, over the recent past now, there is obviously part of the fiscal consolidation means that we can't expect any major increases. And we have fortunately got the economic package, which was supposed to come to an end, has been extended. Because as you know, they introduced a five-year package during the crisis. It was supposed to come to an end, and we have that budget, so we predict that we will carry on in the region of 9.9 billion rand, and it will be divided, as I said, according to our priorities, which is mainly industrial development. So the two divisions, Industrial Development Division and IDAD, Incentive Administration Division, those two divisions carry the bulk of our budget. Then the rest is the special economic zones, which is growing in importance because now we are adding industrial parks. It's a new indicator we're introducing. It's a new target we're introducing. But special economic zones and industrial parks, so the infrastructure part of DTI incentives is there now, 1.7 billion rand. We think that is the part that is going to have to grow because we need to provide economic infrastructure to anchor our investment. Honourable Chair, that is then open for questions and discussion. Thank you very much.
Yes, that was quite a marathon presentation. Thank you very much, though, for the detail. Members, this is our opportunity to engage Honourable Williams, Honourable McPherson, Honourable Alberts, Honourable Eerstapleisen, Honourable Kicharia, Honourable Buyani. Let's have it in that order to enable everyone to have a chance to ask the chair questions they wish to answer. Ask. Please allocate initially 3 minutes. And we will have a second round when that has been responded to. Honourable Williams.
Thank you, Chair. I've got some few questions which will also include the Auditor General's report that was given to us earlier. So I'll start with that. On slide 23 of the Auditor General's report, they said areas of concern were performance management, oversight and monitoring, procurement and contract management, human resource management, and financial management. These have all gone down from where they were previously last year to now yellow blocks on the presentation. And I'm quite concerned about that because it seems that the DTI is going backwards. So if they can please tell us what they're doing to deal with these issues that have been raised by the Auditor General. Secondly, with regard to the Auditor General's report, I just want to say, although the DG did say that they received clean audits this year, they must remember that a clean audit does not indicate a good performance or good record keeping. It just indicates that you told the truth in the audit. So we must bear that in mind, because a clean audit doesn't necessarily say that everything is fantastic. It just says that everything that they were told was the truth. So you could have reported bad things, and that would have also been given a clean audit. I still want clarity on the Auditor General's report when it says performance indicators not well defined, there's a baseline that was unreliable. These sort of things is quite a big flag, raising a flag with me, because of the fact that from the presentation we've just received from the Director General, there were a lot of information and a lot of figures. And if the Auditor General is saying that these figures might not necessarily be reliable, baselines aren't reliable, and performance indicators aren't reliable, and they're not well defined, I'm a bit skeptical about the information that we've just received. And if you can just tell us what exactly is happening there. With regard to the report that the DG has just given us, on slide 14 it talked about the number of jobs that were being supported and the number of jobs that were being created by the incentive programs. And the total there is 10,000 jobs supported and 20,000 jobs, or 10,000 new jobs and 20,000 jobs to be retained. So I'd like to know from the DG, if we were to take away the 6 billion rands that we're spending on incentives, would we only lose 30,000 jobs? Because these are what you're saying to us. Also, 14 of the DTI's report. I'd also like to know, it says the number of enterprises that have been approved for financial support for incentives is 850. And I think it's important that this committee gets a list of those companies. And on that list, it should tell us what their BEE status is, how much money they're getting from the 6 billion rands, how many jobs they currently create, and who owns them. Obviously, if it's an international company, there might be some exemptions to the BEE status there. But I do think we should know about this. I'm very seriously concerned about the 6 billion rands that's been spent on incentives, and we're not getting clear information about what exactly this government is paying for. And I think that the DTI should come up with some a better way of explaining to this committee exactly what it is we're spending 6 billion rand on this incentives on, because it seems to me that it's 30,000 jobs, which works out at 200,000 rand per job. Now, is that what is happening? Are these jobs permanent? You know, we've got no level. We don't understand. I don't understand when you say we're going to be retaining 20,000 jobs from these approved enterprises. What is the current? How do you prove that? You said to us that if they're, you know, harvesting this year, then they, or now, then suddenly the jobs go up, but, you know, next month they might not be harvesting it, as an example, then the jobs go down. How is that figure measured? I'm very skeptical about the figures, Chairperson, basically. Thank you.
Like that. Honourable MacPherson.
Thank you very much. Just with respect to the Auditor General's report, DG, you know, I've said this repeatedly, that I'm concerned about the targets that, you know, you guys set for yourselves and then are measured against. Now, for me, you know, on your Indicator 3 and Program 2, 4 status reports on global engagements, I mean, that shouldn't be a target. That should just be something that happens naturally. It should be something that this committee and Parliament should be briefed on regularly. It's something that the DTR should be publishing regularly. So, you know, I get concerned when, you know, these you know, very low numbers of things that should just be happening naturally are measured targets for you. And then on to your presentation, and I'm glad that you highlight some of the economic growth being attributed to agriculture. And I think agriculture rebounded by 33% in the last quarter. And it's what I've expressed to Minister Davies, and there doesn't seem to be discussion in the department about it, what is your view on how expropriation without compensation is going to affect industries like agriculture? How is it going to provide policy clarity. Because right now, there is no clarity. And we can say, well, you know, it's going to be done in a way in which food security is not jeopardized and agriculture is not affected. But the truth of the matter is you can't have all of that. You've got to pick one or the other. They cannot exist in tandem together. Moving on to your strategic goals and creating a fair regulatory environment. I think, DG, I've been in this committee for 4 years, and I've never seen the amount of entities that I think are struggling at the moment, from the NRCS to the NLC to the SABs to the National Gambling Board. We still don't have, that still is not a regulator. The entities are starting to unravel at a rapid rate at the moment. And it creates an environment where things like listeriosis are able to spread because the regulators are not doing their job because they're either not able to or unwilling to or have actually been disbanded or fired. So I'd like to know from yourself, what is the latest on the National Gambling Board? What has happened from that forensic report? It's a couple of years now and we're still nowhere down the road. I also believe that the National Lottery Commission is being taken to a meeting with the DTR next week. I'd like to understand what in relation is that to. Is that in relation to the forensic investigation that is taking place into the NLC at the moment? I'm glad to see that the MCEP program is getting funding again, but I again repeat in a meeting that we had last year where it's too short term. There needs to be a longer term view taken on this. It can't be for 3 years. We need to give manufacturing a 5, 10, and 15 year plan, and I really do hope that that is something that you're going to push. I'm very uncomfortable with slide.
Can we begin to close off?
Will I be able to come for a second round then?
I didn't say you would be having a second.
Okay. I'm uncomfortable with slide 20, where the estimates that you give on
you leave that for the second round. You've been going 4 minutes, Honourable MacPherson. Please.
Just doing my job as a legislator
providing. Well, that's why you've been given a second round, which was said right at the beginning. Right. Honourable Albert.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for the holistic presentation. I have three questions for now. I'll continue on the next round. In terms of the bilateral investment treaties that's still still active, and also having regard to the Protection of Investment Act, which says that property is protected in terms of Section 25 of the Constitution and in Section 10. How do you deal with our trading partners when there's talk about expropriation without compensation, talks about the Section 25 being changed in our constitution, and then also the Minister of Land Affairs, Nkwane Mashabane, who said today, and according to the journalist and the news, I'm not sure if she was quoted correctly, but that they can start taking land now because Section 25, as it stands, takes care of expropriation without compensation. So I need some certainty from the department on how you view Section 25. For if Section 25 says property can be taken without compensation, then that impacts the Act itself, the Investment Protection Act, and it will also impact, I suppose, on our bilateral investment treaties. It creates a lot of uncertainty. So that needs to be clarified. Then, secondly, on the BBBE Black Industrialist Program, I see you make mention of a lot of reports. Will we see a report at some point in this committee that explains what interventions you actually did participate in, that you actually actioned, and what the effects of those were, and who were the people involved, the beneficiaries? And lastly, for now, you mentioned the sales
on the Companies Act to increase fair business practices. Can you just explain a little bit what we can expect regarding that? And I just want to add something to that, and that's the conduct of directors in general. And I'm talking about in private business, if we look at Steinhoff, but also public entities like SABC and so forth. We've seen directors acting without any regard to the law, without any knowledge that they or the fact that they must have a fiduciary duty towards the shareholders, ultimately the taxpayers. Can we not see stronger regulation in that regard, where directors can actually have skin in the game? In other words, when they sign a contract off and it's found to be irregular, that they must be held personally accountable in the act itself without going to court first and making a finding. Probably they will fight it, but we need to have a shorter path to accountability than we have now. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Elvis. Honourable, was it Honourable Esterhazen, sorry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm also just going to run through a few pages. Page 5, the outlook is improved, that as Gigi has mentioned, to 1.5%. I think that's not cautiously optimistic, it's overly optimistic. We have seen, and just maybe to mention Mr. Stretch, and you said something about dinosaurs. I think, sir, you are one of the really more competent people, and I use whatever you sometimes write in newspapers and other committees as well, your protection policies that you fear, and I think it's really commendable for this department that you have. Government is one of the biggest spenders, and their capacity to transform the economy is higher than anyone. But a lot of small business, SMEs and SMOEs, refuse to do, 80% refuse to do business with this country because of non-payment or late payment. And turning out new legislation is not the answer. It's the gap in legislation. It's the gap in oversight. Zoning through this, as I might know. The automotive sector. The automotive sector is currently in this country gets more protection, I think, and more incentives and grant than anybody. But why is this that the automotive industrial policy forces us to pay nearly double than the international market for vehicles? We're not allowed to import second-hand vehicles, for example, into this country. We pay import duties on taxes on accessories like tires and accessories, 100% plus VAT, 140%. I think that's also not. On your 10-year, page 19, 10-year legislative review, clothing, textile, and everything in this department is actually doing very well. And I think it's also according to people that I just mentioned, and yourself, maybe DJ, but you haven't mentioned the steel industry in this country, the steel tariff protection. China is sitting with over 200 million overcapacity, and already millions of tons have already come after our 10% protection has come back into this country. That was just mentioned, the agriculture, you know. The agriculture, the poultry industry in this country is falling apart. The 13.9% tariff protection that we have just doesn't cut it. It just is not enough. May I carry on, or you want?
30-odd seconds.
On the last one. You know, that's one of Mr. Stratton, I think, favorite ones. Policy certainty is an absolute critical for driving industrialization, investment, and lifting business confidence, and to secure investments. And if we haven't got this in this country, then we are in serious trouble. Thank you. Well, that's about it. Maybe just the last one on special economic zones. Special economic zones work for one way. But it does not deviate from the crippling social labor and environmental legislation that we enforce anywhere else in the country. And that's why it will always be a problem. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. Honorable Kichal.
Thank you. Thank you for the presentation. It's an impressive inventory of what has been done and what is targeted. I, however, am more interested in the cost benchmarked against the benefit, because that's the proof of the pudding in the always. So I'm interested in the cost per job where you've co-invested in the manufacturing.
Mr. Medina, please don't walk in front of the speaker this time.
I'm interested in the cost per job where you've invested in the manufacturing industry, and I'm also interested in how sustainability is monitored. I'm interested, furthermore, in the cost of the SEZs with regard to cost per job compared to other benchmark countries. I've seen some fairly scary figures about the cost per job with regard to Kucha in particular, I'd be interested to gain a further understanding of that. I'd also be interested to gain an understanding about why there's this particular push to democratize, if you like, the SEZs and have one in every province, regardless of whether it makes economic sense or not. Interested in what interventions, you list 78 interventions for black industrialists amounting to 7.2 billion rands that will create 8,000, retain 8,000 jobs and create 9,500 new jobs. I'm interested to know what the projected contribution of this investment is to GDP. I applaud the foray into revitalizing industrial parks and the Technology Innovation Agency. But in terms of industrial parks, the investment by comparison to the BI, black industrialists, for example, is small beer, and this is a very crucial area. Technical Innovation Agency, you're investing 1.6 billion and result in 4.48 billion return in terms of contribution to GDP plus 14,000 jobs. Now that seems to be a rather good return compared to the others where we don't even see the return or where the return has been less. So I'm interested to know why the focus is not disproportionately more there rather than in this nebulous creation of 100 black industrialists. Thank you.
Honorable Kichalia, Honorable Buyani.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think the DTI in the process must be able to respond to the AG opinion in terms of regarding the inconsistent on target. I think that will be one. Then, Chairperson, the other one is with regard to the SEZ. We note the success stories and also we applaud the department. Then we want to check as to what are the challenges, if any, experience in some of the SEZ. And also, how can we be able to implement that in other provinces or other local municipalities, given the effect of the experiences and the challenges? I'm not so sure in terms of the broad-based economic participation through the targets, as you indicated. Hence, we have a report from the AG that say we have challenges in terms of the triple PE. Then how are we implementing the triple PEE in the process while we're failing to deal with the preferential procurement policies? I'm not so sure, because yet in terms of the report, page 7, the QLFS, you said it went down in terms of the employment with 2%. But here, if I check, it seems it's 1%. I'm not so sure whether it's a misprint or something on your report. And also, can we indicate in terms of the SEZ?
Right.
That will be the last one, Chair.
Yeah.
In terms of the SEZ, the impact on localization, the triple BEE, in the process being assisted. And also, I would like the departments to furnish us with the enterprises that they said this one we've managed to assist them. Here is the scorecard in terms of triple BEE, so that we know exactly these 2,000 jobs that you said in terms of the status quo, they are being assisted, Chair. Thanks for now.
No, thank you very much. Now, that's everyone on the first round. So if the department, and I believe there were one or two questions to the Auditor General, is that correct, or between the two? But let us allow the DG and Trade and Industry to respond.
I'm going to maybe start off then, Manchumi, with your permission, just to deal with the issue of the Auditor General's comments and so on. And so, as you know, the Auditor General, besides the financial aspect of its oversight, it also has now oversight of performance management. And also, we have also a Department of Monitoring and Evaluation in the Presidency. So, monitoring and performance, and then also, obviously, we have our own management of monitoring and performance system within the DTI. So I'm going to maybe ask my colleagues to just take you through, but as you know, what happens is before we develop our APP and we set our performance targets, it is sent to the Auditor General for advice and comment, and then we incorporate it and so on. So there's a process of interaction and engagement with the Auditor General, because as I indicated, we need to determine what is the correct target to set, what is the appropriate measurement to use, and so on. And so I'm going to ask maybe Jody and then Shabir, who is also a former, former AG's office and our own, who's got vast experience, and I could say Jody is also doing a master's in this topic of performance management as well. Okay.
Right, and I think you're continuing. Yes, thank
you. Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Honourable Members. I think just to support what the DG said, as part of our assurance process, we developed the first draft of the annual performance plan. Roughly, it's sent to Treasury and DPMA in October. The second version is sent in November, and then we table in March. Now, between November and March, we refine the annual performance plan internally, and then round about end of January, beginning of February, this is then sent to the Auditor General for their inputs and their comments. We had initiated this process a few years ago to try and minimize the impact and the kind of issues we were getting in the annual audit. So the AG's presentation is based on a draft version of the annual performance plan. Subsequent to that, we've taken into account their comments, and have included in the annual performance plan and then have revised it. So for instance, on the issue about the non-financial performance, on their slide 33, it's captured in our annual performance plan on page 60. So we've specified their non-financial, and the technical indicator description also then matches that. So a lot of these comments have been taken into account. In addition, the framework that we base this annual performance plan on, we've regarded that as a framework, and it's a framework that guides how we set out and measure and document performance. So when we are reporting around performance indicators that are new, changed, or have remained unchanged, we report that in our annual report. There's a section there that documents the progress around performance indicators per program. And then I think the just in terms of the issue about a discrepancy between quarter one and quarter two performance in one of our divisions, the department has a system in place to look at divisional reports in terms of performance 30 days after the end of the quarter. Internal audit then verifies that performance information. Where there are discrepancies between those processes, this is then highlighted. So we've dealt with this, I think, in our meeting that we had on the, I think on the 27th of February, looking at that. So the internal audit raised an issue, and it's in fact been resolved. So we go through this process, it's about 60 days after the end of the quarter, where we get those reports, and then we go back and check what did management say, what's internal audit saying, and then how do we resolve that. And the idea is that by the end of quarter four, our annual targets have then been verified, assessed, and management and internal audit is happy that these are the figures that that we can commit to. I think the manner in which we're looking at performance information, in my view, I think we need to focus a lot more attention around this, because I think some of the nuances and the richness of the work that we're doing isn't captured in the way in which departments actually experience that work. So I think this is part of an ongoing engagement we've certainly had with the Auditor General. But DG, I thought I'd just chat that. If there's any other details, then I can come back to that.
Thanks, DG, and good morning to the honourable colleagues. Just to add on what the Group CEO has said, the first part of the AG's report covered a review of the draft APP. And this was something that was put in place 4 to 5 years ago. And how we view this is a really a value add from the AG's office. In the past, we would go into an audit and receive all these as audit findings. Now, with the relationship we have with the Auditor General, these are all value-added findings in the process that enhances our performance management processes. So we took this into account, and we actually have effected these changes on the final APP that was tabled in Parliament. On the second part of the report with regards to the status of records review, the Auditor General himself is quite passionate about this status of records review because how he views this is that this is an early warning indicator to departments on possible issues that may arise during the audit. So these issues or these findings, we have engaged the Auditor General. Some of the areas specifically with regard to financial management, HR management, performance management, procurement and contract management, these relate to some of the processes and policies that are in place. We have engaged the Auditor General. Some of the policies do require review. However, with the procurement environment, because it's so regulated, we do get in any financial year 3 or 4 updates to the treasury regulation in terms of new practice notes being issued. So it becomes quite difficult from a policy perspective. How we've explained to the Auditor General is that we do have a broad policy in place on supply chain management. However, we do issue financial circulars to enable the staff within DTI to understand the changes that come into effect through these revised instruction notes from Treasury. So we do have these processes under control, and we continuously manage them. With regard to the last issue regarding HR management, it is an issue we've engaged the Auditor General on, and it's something that we've internally discussed, and we will also be addressing those as part of the process that the Auditor General will be embarking as part of the annual audit. I'll stop for you. Thanks.
Chair, so as you can see, there is an iterative process, and what we've also done with the AG now, so that we don't run into problems during the audit, is that we agree up front what are the issues, what are the things we're trying to measure, because as you recall, we had an absurd situation where we almost got a qualified audit, because when we ran an internship program, we used not our money, but we used the skills fund money for taking on the interns. And then Auditor General told us we can't, because it's not DTI's money, we must split the interns into DTI and higher education, you know. So you get absurd situation. How do you measure your performance and so on? So what we agreed with AG is that we will sit down to them at the beginning of every financial year. We will take them through exactly from the NDP and from government's overall plan to our industrial policy, to what we see as the main issues we will be doing this year, how we intend to measure them, and then have a discussion about how is the best way to measure it. So, for example, that is why we've got the issue of Brexit and the AGOA. It's never on our agenda. It's never been there before. But, of course, we will be spending and putting significant resources into those two projects, AGOA and Brexit as an example, and even G20 because of the steel crisis. But of course, now it's a new thing, and that's why we had to develop a new, how do we monitor performance? And therefore, as I said, to then deal with Honourable McPherson, is that is the best way we've learnt to deal with trade negotiation, is the issue of status reports. And so on. Of course, it is part of your ongoing work, but performance actually measures your ongoing work. You have to create indicators so that you can measure how you've done in that day-to-day work and so on. So then turning to Honorable Williams, I think he's dealt with that. I think he has raised the important thing then about the jobs created, the 10,000 and the 20,000. And do we support the 30,000 jobs? As I indicated, I think I try to explain how incentives work, and that incentives, we must understand that when we say the manufacturing sector, for example, employs 1.7 million people. Now, our job as a DTI is one to maintain that 1.7, or we've built it to 1.7 million, and to expand that 1.7 million of the manufacturing industry as a whole. Now, as I said, incentives is probably not even, it is the one which you see all the time, but as I said, a economy and a manufacturing sector is driven. And as you know, if you know the economist, Keynes, he actually said the biggest factor that drives it is demand. If you take the two things that everything depends on is supply and demand, the biggest factor is actually demand, not supply. Because people don't have a problem in supplying it, and we can give how many incentives to a company. The question whether that company employs people or the economy grows depends on the demand for the product from that company. So many of our interventions, Honorable Williams, when we say we've created and maintained 130,000 jobs in the automotive industry, we say it's the totality of our interventions, both on the demand and the supply side, that have created that. So what we say is you must measure us on that. As I explained to you, in another country which withdrew its support, they have zero employment in the automotive industry. So if you don't have these support systems, you lose that industry, especially in vulnerable sectors like autos and clothing and textile and footwear. So what we're saying is you mustn't measure it on, if you say if you withdraw the support, as I said, it will obviously have an impact. But as I said, if there's a demand for a product, for example, General Motors received exactly the same incentives as Volkswagen did. Volkswagen is expanding employment. General Motors has closed down. Why? Because not depending on DTI's incentive, because people didn't buy General Motors in the South African market. They buy Toyotas and Vivos and so on. So that is the, so your incentive is not the decisive factor. We use the incentive to crowd in private sector investment. So as I explained, when we put in our 20 million, the auto manufacturing puts in 80 million rand. But what it does is it makes us a competitive destination, because if he goes to Australia, he doesn't get that 20 million rand, so therefore he doesn't go to Australia. So, as I said, so our incentive, and that's why it's not a subsidy, it is an incentive to attract and to get co-investment going. So, when, as I said, if we withdraw all these incentives, we will obviously lose, for example, our entire film industry would not exist in this country if we don't have a film incentive. If we don't have a BPO incentive, they will all go to the Philippines tomorrow because they've got an incentive there. And the United States has clearly shown which areas makes films. Those states that provide film incentives, they attract all the films. Those who don't have no film industry and so on. So I think it, you can't take the amount of money we put in. And then also there is a sort of a suggestion, for example, if we take the money from the auto industry and we put it in the poultry industry, we're going to grow the poultry industry. Economics don't work like that. Poultry will depend on the demand for poultry and how do you compete and are you cost effective against others, which will determine whether you have an industry or not. But our job as a DTI is not to determine between sectors. Our job is to support existing sectors which are and make them dynamic and competitive and then to create new industries all the time. And that is what our incentives is about. And as I said, so I think our biggest indicator is not to micromanage, because people have tried central planning, where you ask every company and you tell the company you cannot fire people, you must employ so many people. If you don't employ so many people, you don't get an incentive. It can't work like that. Companies need the flexibility to adapt their production and their employment levels to make themselves sustainable. We must just ensure that if a company does invest its money, government is there to stand behind them. And that is what our incentive work and how we deal with jobs. On the whole, as you can see, we now have 1.7 million people employed in manufacturing, and it has been growing. And especially in key sectors like autos, clothing, film, we have created new sectors entirely which didn't exist before, and so on. So that is where we come on, and that's why we propose this system. And as I said, it's 10 years of IPAP, and I think, as I said, if something works, that is why we are repeating it, because it allows us to constantly chop and change it depending on the environment. On the list of companies from Honorable Williams, we did, as we indicated in our annual report, we gave a complete list of all the companies that received DTI incentives. But as you know, what companies wanted, they only wanted a list of the black companies that we support. And we said we refuse to be racially profiled, and we are giving a list of all companies that are, it's transparent. And as I said, the only time people started asking for this is when we started the Black Industrialist Program. So we do have a list, and it's included in our annual report of each and every company. Honorable Chair, we created a separate division to manage incentives. The reason for that is that each and every claim must be approved, must be measured. When companies apply and get, before they get their money, they must send us their statements of the machinery they've bought. They must give us their bank accounts, their bank balances. We send out inspectors to go and verify that the machinery has been bought, and so on. So it is a very laborious process. We help about 3,000-4,000 companies a year. Now, I'm saying it is not in terms of micromanaging that process, but what we do is, and that's why the reason that we managed to able to get audited clean audits is because we put a rigorous process of checks and balances in there. So for example, there's big companies that don't get the incentive because, for example, they retrench some employees, and we said the baseline says you must maintain your baseline of employment. When you applied for the incentive, you said you've got, and it's a company in Durban, you got 8,000 people employed there. When they came back for the incentive and we asked for the baseline, it was 7,000 something. And we couldn't pay the incentive. So even though the company, as I said, it's through no fault of its own, it sells big vehicles into the continent, but because Nigeria and others went into a recession, people are not buying these cars. But as I said, so we monitor. Chair, what we can assure you, we have a system, and this is audited by the Auditor General. Every application is assessed, and that's why we deal with this issue of projection. there's always a big gap when a company applies for an incentive. They say, I'm going to put in 100 million. I'm going to employ so many people. When the actual investment takes place, it is usually less than that. Because, of course, a company spends as little as it can. If it can get cheaper machinery here, it takes the cheaper machinery, and so on. So you can't then tell the company, no, you said you're going to put in 100 million, you must put in 100 million. And so all we want to know is that you have put in the actual equipment and machinery. But as I said, I can assure the committee these things are managed, especially they are checked. We have inspectors, and before we, so we have many complaints, and you also come with your complaints where company says, I haven't been paid. And that is because they haven't completed the paperwork. And therefore, it is the most unpopular division because they have the fights with the actual companies. And people run to me and the minister and to you sometimes to say, I haven't received my incentive. It's because you didn't do that paperwork. And as I said, because they act without fear and favor, they don't care who you are. If you don't qualify, you don't qualify. If you haven't submitted this report or that report, you don't get your incentive, and so on. So, as I said, it's years of experience. As I said, we closed down two incentive schemes. We closed down the GAIS program because 400 million was lost under that program. And as I said, so because they set exports as their target. And that's why they used a wrong. That's why I'm saying the measurement you use is important because they use exports as their target. So Anglo-American, for example, Vegelegen Wines, it exports wine, and then they used to get a subsidy for that. That program was closed down. Similarly, the labor program has been closed down because all those jobs are what you used to call ghost workers. People employ people just for the incentive. Once the incentive is gone, and so on. So we've dealt with that issue, and I dealt with the target. Honorable McPherson, this is an important issue, the question of the constitutional amendments issue that you've raised. I must say, as a department, as you know, we introduced the Investment Act, where we gave cast iron guarantees to investors that their investment is safe. And as you know, we maintain that, and we've got a one-stop shop, and even as we speak, we are actively engaged with many companies that have questions about the constitutional amendment. The proposed constitutional amendments and the land reform issue. We are engaged with them, and as I said, we're having meetings in this week also. We're meeting some companies where we're giving them the full reassurance that they will have no impact on them. We've explained that, that as I said, it's going through a constitutional process, and it is done in a constitutional manner. And if, as I said, and if, our assessment is that if there is any change, it would not be, it would not impact any of our, of the current investments, and therefore that is what we've put to companies. And as you can see, our in our sector, the investments are expanding, and FDI is actually growing. And as you could see, there's a big point from last night, UBS. Said that we can expect massive inflows of capital into the country. We're the next Brazil, as they said, where there's going to be where there's a turnaround after the new administration. We are also hosting, with the president's office, a major investment conference in the second quarter of the year, and we have already developed a concept document for that. And we will be attracting investors, and I think we will deal with this issue. I think, Honourable McPherson, you mentioned about land reform and the question of expropriation and growth. You can have one, but the other, history says the opposite, is that no country has been able to grow until it's fixed its land question and its agricultural question. So as you know, in the whole East Asia, in the United States, they developed the Homestead Act, where they gave land to people. So you have to, South Korea, Japan, China, Vietnam, all these economies, they first, and even India, where you had the Green Revolution, you must give land to the people and before you can actually go on your industrialization drive. So as you know, what happened in South Africa is that the reason we have an underperforming economy and it's structurally abnormal is because instead of giving people land, they took people's land. Now all the, I think it, this program must be by expanding, as the president said, by expanding and granting more agricultural land for agricultural purposes to black farmers can only be positive for growth, and so on. So we think these two processes can go together. The question of giving more agricultural land to black farmers and growth. Then the question of the institutions of DTI. I can say with the gambling board, as you know, we are proposing that we had a board there. The board was found to be engaging in some corrupt activities. We suspended the board, and we've appointed an administrator. Where we are now is that when we amend the act, we are proposing that we do away with the board. All you need to have for the gambling is a gambling regulator, like we have at the CIPC or at the National Regulator for Compulsory Specification. You don't need a board. Actually, you create more problems by creating a board. So we are proposing that we do a regulator. As you know, Honorable McPherson, what has happened is the gambling board got a clean audit last year. So when we intervened, we fixed it, and it is fixed now. So that is what was our mention at the gambling board. Similarly, as you know, with the National Regulatory for Specifications and with your assistance and support, we've also turned the corner there, and that NRCS is functional now, and it is performing. We are busy with the same process now with SABS, where, as you know, the minister has asked them to come up with a turnaround plan, and we need to improve systems there and so on. As you know, similarly with the CIPC, it was in a problem. We we fixed it, and now the CIPC is getting clean audits, and it is registering companies in less than a day. So I think the DTI, as I said, 10 of them received clean audits last year. So I would say that as I said, well, doesn't mean we have no problems, but when we do have a problem, we go in, we fix it, and we try to deal with those things. And all Kachalia, I hope I've dealt with the issue of, you see, cost for job. You can't measure one investment and you take the employment at those current levels and you say that's the cost of job. So, for example, if you start Kuha, there is a certain level of fixed cost that you have to spend. It's like building an airport. You have to spend the whole amount. You can't have half an airport. You have to spend the full amount. Then over many decades, you achieve a return on that investment. Now, for example, Kuha, we spent the billions, but now it is a world-class facility. And now, for example, when Vice President of China came, he went to Kuha and he said this place reminds him of the Shanghai Industrial Zone. Why? Because of the investment we made there. And that is why they are building a 12 billion rand plant in that facility, producing 100,000 vehicles soon. Now, that never existed before in Kuha. But before that, the state has to put in the investment in economic infrastructure. And you have to have what they call plug and play. Now, the question is, you measure your return on investment over a long term because the state is the long-term investor and so on. Similarly, as I said, when we started the auto industry, we are seeing the turnaround time. 22 new leather factories opened.
Just a minute, DG. Yeah. I'm appealing to all the members. We asked questions. Can we focus on the responses? Some of the questions asked were not ones you asked, but frankly, they do assist. Carry on.
Yes. So I hope I've dealt with the issue. Then the issue of the one person, one vote, one SEZ, one province, the democratization of SEZs. As we reported to you, Honorable Chair, on special economic zones, we developed a SEZ Act in 2014, and we brought it to Parliament. Because, as you know, the whole sector was not regulated at all. So what we did is we also did the division of labor between national and provinces and so on. And as you know, there's an SEZ board. And before anybody can apply for an SEZ, they must conduct feasibility studies. They must apply to the board. They must show economic viability. before they can be approved as a SEZ. That's why we had the big fights with Atlantis and Sultana being next to each other. They had to prove these SEZs are viable and so on. So that is why we ensure that all of our SEZs are. The one province is that we want to aim at one per province because, as I said, we want to decentralize activity. As you know, all successful countries don't rely on one or two regions. And therefore, we want to spread the economic activity. But of course, that province will have to still meet the criteria. So, for example, in the Northern Cape, their SEZ is around renewable energy. And they are attracting investment into renewable energy. In Atlantis, it will be different. In Saldana, it will be different, and so on. But I think I've dealt with that issue. Then, Honorable Vuhani, I think with the AG, we've dealt with some of that, but we are trying to ensure always consistency. That's why we have this regular engagement with the AG. Not only do we have it as a department, the minister meets with them on a quarterly basis as well. Then we as officials meet, and then we do it so that we can get in line. But actually what we are doing is we're just trying to perfect instruments. And sometimes it's what you measure, how you measure it, and so on. And as you know, accounting is a very a detailed process. For example, if you're going to say you give employment numbers, you have to then produce the ID in our books of those people. So it is that level of detail that we go into. So I think that maybe they didn't do you a favor by using words like misleading and all these things, you know. But I think they were a bit careless with the way they presented, especially for accountants. Then on the issue of BE procurement and the localization, I think in the procurement you raised, as I said, you will see in the new IPAP we will come with a clear plan of measures to ensure that there's compliance with localization. And as I said, we are actually we're making clear proposals on the use of the Auditor General to audit, to make localization part of the audit process of the AG's office. And that way we will ensure that companies do, they have to show, like we do with our incentives, companies have to produce the paperwork to show that they have implemented the designation. And then finally on Honorable Alberts, I think again you've mentioned correctly the issue of the protection of investment action and how we see Section 25. As I said, we think those changes will be extremely limited. I mean, you're the final arbiters of that as the legislature, but I know the threshold is very high. You need a two-thirds to make constitutional amendments. So there will have to be cross-party collaboration, and those cases of without compensation will be extremely limited to very cross issues of forced removals and so on. I mean, that kind of land could possibly be expropriated without compensation, but I think most of the investments would not be touched by this clause. Then I think Honorable Alberts asked about the interventions, for example, steel, poultry, and others, and what have we done with these kind of interventions. As you know, with each of these, when steel crisis came up, we do a lot of different interventions, but we basically, with under Garth Strachan here, we set up a committee with the industry, and then we jointly work on how to save the industry. For example, we had to help to save Highveld Steel with cash flow problems. Then we also put up tariffs for different products. Then we had ArcelorMittal with its own peculiar problems and so on. So, as I said, it's a varied number of support measures. Similarly with poultry, we've had to work with the poultry industry. As you can see, a number of those companies are now recovering after a big crisis. The results of both Astral Foods and RCL came out, and you can see those two companies have responded now, have become profitable again. But it's we work jointly with the industry, and then we work to try to, as I say, industrial policy, because it's 90% private sector. You have to find a way of working with them, with the private sector, to grow these companies. I think you're absolutely right about strengthening when the companies' amendments come up. I think you're right, the personal liabilities. As you know, in other jurisdictions, Bernie Madoff is in jail. After a year, other people are still sort of doing horse racing, you know, while they do have done the same thing. So we don't have that levels of, I think we will support you on increasing the personal liability of directors. And sorry, and finally, Honourable Esther Hazen, we've dealt with the issue of, the, as I said, the non-payment. We've set those targets, and that is the biggest problem. Other departments not paying within 30 days. Small business are badly affected. And as I told you, I indicated what we done, we did there. We've perfected a system now where over the years of paying our suppliers within 15 days, we have taken that system and it is we presented it to the presidency and we've taken it to a number of departments so that we can improve other departments' payment within the 30 days as well. And then you've also asked about the cost of the auto industry. I think you're right, there is still the question, well, it's throughout the South African economy because of the highly concentrated nature, prices are high from telecoms prices to auto prices and so on. But I think the one, as I said, the one proposal about imported second-hand cars, as you know, that's why I'm saying industrial policy is very complex, but as you know, the reason all countries ban second-hand imports, and because if you're going to import second-hand cars, you won't build a local industry. So that's why Japan, Europe, they don't allow you to import second-hand cars. But countries like Nigeria can't industrialize because they import all the second-hand cars from Japan. You find driving around in Nigeria at cheap, cheap prices, and therefore, while we're working with Nigeria to develop the automotive industry, the first measure they have to take, they have to ban second-hand imports. As you know, Kenya gets second-hand clothing from the United States. They cannot develop a local industry because everything, they are flooded by second-hand imports. Kenya had to take a stand. They were almost thrown out of a AGOA, but they said we have to stop the import of second-hand clothing, because we can never industrialize if we go on that route. So that's why I'm saying industrial policy must be well thought out, the measures you introduce, the tariff level, the level of support. And the best way we found in terms of industrial policy, you can only do it by working hand-in-hand with industry to grow that industry, not to unilaterally set targets and unrealistic, mechanistic, inflexible targets. And don't use, as I said, don't base your incentives or subsidies on labor or on exports as a target. Chair, that takes care of some of it.
Thank you very much, DG and the team. But now we did indicate a second round. I want to explain to members of the committee, no, you are going to get this. We're not going to get it responded to, all of it. They're going to come back in writing because we truly are running out of time, and a number of hearings are going on in Parliament, including the Labour, and some of our members are in those public hearings, which have statutory deadlines. Right, so you'll ask all your questions briefly, all right? The Honourable Macpherson, the Honourable Williams, sorry, it was the Honourable Esterhazen, Honourable Kachalia, and Honourable Elvis. Please, not more than 2 minutes.
Difficult. With respect to expropriation without compensation, I don't think that there's anyone that denies that we want people to own land. We want them to own
it. Honourable Macpherson, please, I'm appealing to all of you, ask the question. You may put preambles in writing. We should have been out at 11:30, please.
And I think no one disputes that. I think the issue is the uncertainty that is created with investors, but we'll chat about that later. I just want an update. Who has been charged from the National Gambling Board from that corruption investigation that named certain individuals, and just an understanding of what the NLC is being called to brief the DTI about next week. With respect to page 20, I think that I have a problem with the estimates that are given with respect to leveraged investment and job creation. I would think that in a presentation like this, you should give a bottom line number of what the worst case scenario would be, and then what the best case scenario would be, instead of having an estimate with an asterisk saying subject to X and Y. Rapidly moving on to what are they called again? Those not the export zones, the industrial parks. Yeah. So I mean, you said that you want to understand how should you measure those industrial parks, and I've said from the very beginning, well, a business plan would have been helpful to understand what are the targets or objectives of it. How many people are we planning to bring in? What investment are we looking at? How many companies are we looking to attract? How many jobs are we looking to either retain or create? And so far to date, after 200 million rand, I think it is, or 120 million rand that's been spent in those industrial parks, I still don't know of a single new company that has been attracted to these industrial parks. They were already there. I would think that those should be your indicators of how successful those industrial parks are, and I would still like a business plan on them, and hopefully
you
I can finally get that
in
writing.
Right.
Yeah. And but just for the record, Whirlpool were already at SATB.
Right.
They've invested.
Right. Would you like to just engage back to front? DG, if we start that, it will never stop. Right, Honourable Williams.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, firstly, I just want to take exception to the DG's saying that the Auditor General's report was clumsy because they use words like misleading. To be honest, Chair, I believe the Auditor General and request that the DG withdraw that comment, and I'd like to encourage the Auditor General to continue calling a spade when they see it. And we, it's good, keep up that good work. Secondly, Chair, can the DTI assure this committee that the areas of concern raised by the Auditor General on page 23 of their report, can they confirm that those concerns will not be of concern next year? And also with that, I'd like to know, what is the DTI doing to ensure that the post of Chief Information Officer is filled and no longer an acting position? And then lastly, Chairperson, the 6 billion rand that we're spending on incentives, the reasoning behind this and the benefit that we're getting is being sort of explained to us, but it's still very hazy. May I suggest that some sort of independent study be done on these incentives so that we can have a thorough understanding of what exactly this government is spending 6 billion rands on? Because to say to us, well, if it happens in Australia, they took away the incentive and then the motor industry disappeared, and fine, that may be the case, and I'm sure it is, but what benefit are we getting from spending the 6 billion rand on incentives? And that's the answer I'm not getting. And I would request that we get this from some independent person that can tell us that the 6 billion rand that government is spending is far better spent on incentives than perhaps on free higher education. I mean, that could create jobs as well. I mean, if we, so I just want to know whether or not it's worth it, and I want somebody independently to tell us. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Williams. Honourable Esterhazen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The GE in his answers now spoke about incentives and about localization, and you said in a previous meeting, DG, that you think localization could be a game changer for the South African manufacturing. And this, I agree, of course, I think we all agree. But why is the DTI not enforcing this? Why do we see the passenger rail agency in their own yards import components and things? Why, for a stupid example, Madupi and Kusuli import boilers for BEE companies that were giving millions of incentives, and they still do that? We're not enforcing whether. You spoke about policies and action plans, and we agree policy coherence and program alignment is not negotiable. We just can. We speak from page 14 to page whatever on the industrial policy action plan. But we do have the NDP. We should be regarded as the most extensive and coherent. Is this now just being shelved? We have the 14-point, the 9-point, the iPad, because we have all this, and this all run in parallel. Now, where do we go from here, you know? And it's interesting that some of these run in contradictory with these policies with each other. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Esterhazen, Honourable Kichalia.
Thank you, Chair. Notwithstanding my view that a cogent trade policy trumps an industrial policy any day of the week, let's revisit your return on investment and performance indicators that you were talking about. I think it would be extraordinarily useful if we were to get from you, both in terms of SEZs and also the Black Industrialist Program, because presumably in the Black Industrial Program there is sunk investment and ongoing investments by the incumbents. So what the ratio of total public capital investment is to private investment, what the ratio of government funding, both CapEx and OpEx, is to private investment, what the ratio of staff costs as a percentage of operational costs are, and what the ratio of operational costs are to operational income. If we had those measures, we'd go a long way to answering some of the concerns that the Honourable Williams asked. In terms of KUKA, it's my understanding that for it to break over a 20-year period would probably require operational costs to be cut by something like 30% to 40%. That's my gut feel. Now, that's because operational costs are high and rental income is low, despite the turn around the corner that we see. So I'd like to know how much additional investment would be required for sustainability over that long period, and what can be done to reduce the impact of this on the state. An unrelated question, you talk about BEE commitment, yes, very good. But I'd like to know why the SAFTA with regard to the sugar industry had to come before Parliament to voice its concerns about the lack of transformation. Surely the DTI and the Commissioner should have addressed this, and if they didn't, why not? Because it was brought here. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Kichalia. Honourable Alberts, is it?
Yes.
Right, and then followed by Honourable Buyani.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just coming back to one of my questions that's not answered, it might have been during the process of other answers, I might have missed it. I just want to know whether there will be at some point a report given to this committee regarding the Black Industrialist Programme, you know, what interventions you have taken, how it helped those people, how it created jobs, what the costs were, and so forth. And then lastly, a new question, if you can just give me a brief overview on what is being done in the OR Tambo SEZ, please. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Alberts. Honourable Buyani.
Yeah, Chairperson, I think my question was not responded to. In terms of the SEZ, yes, in terms of challenges, experience, lesson learned, moving forward, and also in terms of localization, how does those SEZ assist localization and triple BEE? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Bion. Now, EG, the way this is going to work, we have run out of time. And I have indicated that the DG and the team will respond to some in writing. And my request is going to be that you return here for another session. But you have got 5 to 7 minutes to address some of the critical points verbally.
Honourable Chair, really quickly then, I think Honourable Williams, I think you're right. The question of the assessment, currently there is a study being done by the Presidency, the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation, on all the incentives across government, including DTIs, and then they will do that cost-benefit analysis and so on. And in addition to that, we do all our incentives are have gone through an assessment, and then we can also provide you with reports on our incentives, value for money, and so on, for all the incentives. On the question of, I think the AG, I accept that. Yes, let me apologize for saying the use of the word misleading, but as I indicated, they themselves withdrew the word and changed it. Honourable Esther Eisen, we agreed with you that, as I said, DTI currently only has the power to designate. Our minister under the PPPFA makes a recommendation to the Minister of Finance to say this product, and then it is up to the Minister of Finance to then designate it and make it a procurement note. And as you know, Treasury then issues an instruction note to all procurement managers across government. What we have proposed to them and we've proposed to government is that, as I said, because of the massive leakages and corruption in this localization, we have proposed that this one be an audit finding and it be part of the annual audit so that we deal with and we deal with consequences if people don't. As I said, in some sectors it's worked well. In clothing and textile, almost 100% of it are people are adhering to that designation, but in rail there's big corruption. Honourable Kachalia, I think yes, let's engage. We will bring you, we can have a detailed discussion then. We can maybe do an assessment of the SEZ program. And then similarly on the Black Industrialist Program, we can have a special session on that because, as I said, we will be hopefully reaching about 98, 99, 100, and then we can, at least time for assessment of that program. On the issue of the KUCHA and the operational costs, actually on that one of the operational costs, we do agree with you. As you know, what happened under the Act, what we have is we've changed the arrangements. Operational decisions and operational costs are done at the provincial level. And at the national level, what we've done, we provide the incentive and we've developed a system now which has strengthened over the years. But for us, you must show us the investor and then we give you the incentive. So that has worked wonders to change the behavior because once you can only come to us once you have secured the investor and then we give you the investment and so on. So that is how we control the provinces and then also to ensure that they manage their SEZs efficiently. We've told them you, because it's their money that's being used for operations, so they will ensure that their money is used properly. Because when the money used to come from national, there isn't a proper incentive system. So we've done that well now. So as you know, so KUCHA, it is the Eastern Cape government that that issues that, and they are responsible for that. On the question of SAFDA, as you know, the commission was only established last year. But as you know, with transformation, I think what we all have to do is DTI has issued the BEE Act. We've strengthened the BEE Act. We're very unpopular because we are the ones who are telling people to transform. And as you know, we get pushback all the time. Now, in SAFDA, there is always vested interest who refuse to transform. And so what we have been, so in different sectors, we've developed charters for them, we've developed that. In this sector has actually resisted, threatened, as I said, companies take us to court and so on. And that is why we have been working jointly with SAFTA and the millers to try to bring transformation, but the sugarcane growers were the most resistant and conservative and backward, and they refused. And as I said, it is a mix of measures, or that, and that's why, because they refused to budge and wanted to go to court, take the minister to court, it is then SAFTA came to Parliament, and then with your support, they accepted some level of transformation and so on. As I said, there's a number of other sectors that are still fighting, but we've done this one now. But it's not the thing, it can never be done by the BE Commissioner. She'll end up in court all the time. Her powers are defined in the Act. Transformation must be done jointly between government and industry. And as I said, you have to deal... you have to use different pressure points, different mechanisms, and so on. I think the rest we will table you with the reports in detail on the Black Honourable Alberts and Honourable Vuyani. On the SEZs, we will do a report, and on the BI program, we will deal specifically
with that. I have a special request to you and the department, and that is to return. You know, this is a very important engagement. Unfortunately, with the way programs have worked, perhaps sometimes in Parliament, we get information at the 11th hour that things have to change. So would it be possible, I hope all members are listening, for you to return on the 27th of March, which is a Tuesday? I'm saying, would it be possible? We need to do this before the end of March. So that's one aspect. The other one would be perhaps to come on Thursday, the 29th of March, for the morning. So what do you suggest, DG?
Honourable Chair, I really would like to, just that both those days are really completely out for me, and I'll... explain to you again, but if we can make it the following week.
What we're going to do is, let us not waste time now. We will engage with staff with you on the matter. If you will just retain your seats for a moment, because I have to complete something very important. Members, please don't leave. We need to pass before we, you know, leave this week. The minutes that weren't passed that date back to November. They're five sets, November, January, February. I issued them, please, and the reason being that we are fast losing the members who were present in the committee, and soon we won't be able to pass them. Do you follow? So, members, you know when you were present, pick up those minutes, which I did have a package in front of me. Who borrowed it? Thank you. And that is, no, not March. We want November. Where is mine? Do I have to appeal for minutes every time I'm here? The 28th of November. And the people present were Adams, Chue, Kalako, Mantash, Boyani, Tiako, Van Skalkveit, and Williams. Right. And the D. Inkata, Easterhuizen, and Freedom Front Alberts. The apologies were both DA members. Right. Page 1. Page 2. You've already had these handed out for 3 weeks. Page 3. Page 4, and the register. You can see I was not present. You elected an acting chair. Do you see that? So, can we have a proposal? Yes, Honourable, do you propose the adoption?
I move for the adoption of the minute.
Right, seconded by Honourable Easterhuizen. Great stuff. Right. The 9th... where's the next one? 9th of March. Where's January? Where's January? Last week we had the chair given a completely confused package. D. Do you remember? Can I borrow someone's package and ask that person to come and sit here? And for the record, I have complained to management about the state of the minutes that are presented here. I am not accepting this again. February the 19th, 13th, I don't have that. That's why I asked one of you, right, here it is under March, to please come and sit here. The 31st of January, right. Fabs, Mantash, Buyani, Tierko, Van Skalbeek, Williams, Kachalia, Esterhazen. Right, those are the people who can adopt them. Page 1. Page 2. Page 3. Please check to see this is signed. Can we please have someone to propose adoption? Honourable Williams, seconded by the Honourable Tierko. Is this now February? Is it the 13th? Right. Fabs, Mantash, Buyani, Tierko, Van Skalbeek, Williams, Kachalia, McPherson, Tlanguini. Right. Page 1. Page 2. Page 3. Please check the register. The 27th of February, proposing it, Honourable Tierko, seconded by the Honourable Williams. 27th February, so I think I read them out, Fabs, Mantash, Buyani, Tierko, Van Skalbeek, Kachalia, McPherson, Esterhazen, Alberts. Page 1. Page 2. Page 3. Check the register, please. Right. Someone to propose adoption, Honourable Esterhazen, seconded by the Honourable Buyani. 9th of March. Fabs, Mantash, Buyani, Tierko, Van Skalbeek, McPherson, Esterhazen, and Alberts. Page 1. Page 2. Page 3. Please note all the resolutions on that page. And the register. Yes, Honourable Esterhazen.
On this, the 9th of March, I see the Honourable Alberts was present, but there's no signature on the register.
Were you present, Honourable Alberts? Because sometimes, and I think in future, I want to see the register when I check the minutes. Yes, Honourable Alberts?
Madam Chair, no, I wasn't. I did submit an apology that day.
Thank you. Your integrity. So please amend these. With that amendment, can we propose adoption? Honourable Buyani, seconded by the Honourable Tierko.
13th of March.
Page 1, Fabs, Mantash, Williams, Buyani, Tierko, and Van Skalbeek, Kachalia, McPherson, Albert Splunk. Right. Sounds almost like we're reading our teams, you know, one after the other coming in. Page 1. Page 2. Page 3. Well, lots of corrections here, that's why I'm just going slowly again. The chairperson took the committee through the report and gave an opportunity to Ms. Makala Mtloli. Oh, I see. Right. Page 3. And the register, please check. Thank you. Please, someone to propose adoption.
Honourable Albert.
Seconded by the Honourable Kachali.
Right.
Members, I want to thank you very much. But do you agree with me that we can't carry on in this manner with the minutes? I hope members agree that this is not acceptable. I have also asked for the secretary who presides with me. The minutes will in future include a phrase that says, compiled by, so that we know who's compiled these minutes and we can address it effectively. This is not going to continue. These are legal documents. So let us accept that. I'd like to thank you, Honourable Tierko, for coming back from Labour and for informing us about the public hearings. Is a Thursday and Friday, which has meant an adjustment to our program, as I'm sure you understand, members. And we also, that apology from the Honourable Inchlorbo is a family matter, and he has had to rush out and he'll only be back next week. So we are going to be short, which requires we think carefully here. You will recall that the 28th of March is the Steinhoff engagement with finance jointly. It is not to be taken lightly. Steinhoff is under the company's intellectual property laws, you know, the SIPCO or whatever, and Advocate Rory Follow is going to be present there to make an input. I say this for DTI's benefit as well, and it is required that we sit there to participate. Is that very clear? However, what I note is that the Honourable Tierko is trying to hold the fort in Labour as well, which, as you know, lost two people, as it were, and has got a new committee chair coming and a whip, etc. This is why we've also lost the Honourable Van Schalkwyk now. So I am only going to release Labour from our side. Now, and that our side meaning here, the ANC, and I'm asking the rest of you, because this is a formal engagement, I would hope, given the serious nature of Steinhoff, that you're all going to avail yourselves of that meeting. Please. I'm looking at everyone. Thank you very, very much. With respect to copyright meetings, the Honourable Tierko has asked me for some changes to that. Am I correct? And the committee program, Mr. Hermans will send out a new one this afternoon just to update things. Is that in order? Right. I want to thank this committee for applying their minds and accepting we could not continue with this engagement. And Mr. Hermans, Mr. Medema, and the DG will engage each other and give us a time when DTI can return. Am I right, DG? We'll do that. Because we do take you seriously, the department, and we want to do justice to this. I'm looking at the Office of the Auditor General. Will you be available again, or is that unlikely? That attitude, good. Right. So on that very constructive note, the meeting is adjourned. Now, you know what, Honourable...